offering our most humble pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan, dear Swami, and dear listeners from around the world. Once again, it is the privilege of Prem and myself from Team Radio Sai to sit together and spend some beautiful moments in this afternoon satsang. You know, a lot has happened in the past week. Of course, everyone knows about the Dasara celebrations that were conducted on a grand scale at Prashanthi Nilayam. But more than that, something very beautiful and subtle has happened with regarding to the hurricane that struck the coastal regions of the states of Andhra Pradesh and Orissa. Radio Sai had, you know, issued a global prayer request asking everybody to pray for Samasta Loka Sukhino Bhavantu. Let everybody be in peace. And what a beautiful prayer it is. How selfless it is. Swami often says that if we are not able to help physically or directly by contributing our might, our energy, our finances, the least we can do is prayer, because prayer is something so powerful that we cannot measure it the way we measure other resources. And indeed, well, those who wish to disagree may disagree, but if we see the result, this was a cyclone that hit the coast with the same intensity as it had done so in 1999. And in 1999, over 10,000 people lost lives. This time, the death toll is as minimal as 8 people. That is the official death toll. Of course, there was a massive evacuation program that the government took up. Now, that in itself was another miracle, because such a kind of evacuation has never been seen before in India. And one cannot just discount the impact and effect of the prayers of the million hearts that went in for the safety and security of these people. The evacuation program was a grand success. The destruction to property was minimal. And even the storm, which many of the centers in the United States had predicted that it would reach speeds of up to 300 kilometers per hour, when it actually struck, was quite less than even 200 kilometers per hour. And nobody could explain this loss of velocity and ferocity. And we at Radio Sai and all of us at Prashanthi Nilayam strongly believe in our heart that the prayers that were sent out from a million pious and devoted hearts indeed played their role. And therefore, it is with a great happy and cheerful mood that both Prem and me are sitting for this satsang to talk and dilate and discuss upon one more subtle and beautiful aspect in our journey towards God. Before we proceed any further, after this elaborate introduction, it's my privilege and pleasure, as always, to welcome Prem. Sai Ram Prem.
Sai Ram Arvind, and thank you for that nice introduction. And it just sparks a thought in me. Often it is said that science contradicts religion, and you know, science is trying to edge out religion and edge out devotion and spirituality. But here is a marvel of science. You know, we are able to know of an impending doom of a cyclone 3 days ahead. And then we get to pray about it and pray and offer our offer our prayer to seeking grace from the Lord, and that spread it through the means of communication.
Correct.
To all people, and to come together and pray for it and to see the grace happen. You know, religion and spirituality and science working hand in hand.
Exactly. Often it is misunderstood and thought that they are opposites. You know, it is said that science opposes religion because religion opposes science. But it is not so. It's almost like Swami used to often say, the two halves of a circle. Both are needed to complete it, though both of them are completely opposite in their structure, shape and nature, the two halves of the circle. But two completely opposite, apparently opposite and opposing structures or figures or shapes are needed to make this circle whole. And this is a phenomenon that we see in our day-to-day life of something totally opposite being actually a compliment and a very much a necessary part of every action that we do. For instance, you know, when I'm trying to hammer a nail into the wall, my objective is to push the nail straight into the wall. But when I begin to hammer, I move my hand in a totally opposite direction. I withdraw it backwards rather than pushing it forwards, but that pullback of my hand, that movement in the opposite direction, is very much necessary for me to push the nail in the forward direction.
Right, and the same thing can be said about shooting an arrow too. You know, when you string an arrow onto the bow, you pull the arrow backwards, and the more you pull it backwards, the more you give it the chance to go forward.
Yes, come closer home when we walk or when we jump. Suppose if I want to jump, what I do is, I want to jump forwards. When I want to leap forwards, I bend backwards. You know, I want to stretch out my muscles in such a manner that I can take that leap forward. At the same time, if I want to jump backwards, I stretch forwards. So again, you see, a movement in a direction opposite to the actual movement that is intended.
Right. And if you take an example of a farmer, you know, that's what he does. He throws away seeds in quest of more seeds. You know, his idea is to have a harvest of seeds. But what does he do? The first act he does is throwing away the little seeds which he has.
Exactly. That is what even, Swami pointed out, saying, when we discussed this last week about the Dasara Yagnam, that is what Swami used to say, that people who say that it is foolishness to throw actually ghee and everything into the fire during the Yagnam is as foolish as stating that a farmer is wasting seeds by scattering them. But again, as you said, in order to get a rich harvest of seeds, the farmer has to do something totally opposite of what he intends. He intends to garner seeds, but he has to throw away the seeds. In the same way, you know, if you take the other profession, a potter, he wants to make a pot which has to hold water. But in order to make the pot which has to hold water, what he does, he keeps the mud and the clay away from water and bakes it in fire so that every drop of water from it comes out. He makes the mud and sand move away from water, so to say, in order to make it capable of holding water.
And you know, in the same context, I'm reminded of a joke actually, not necessarily a serious example for the topic we're discussing. You know, a man with a common cold goes to the doctor and he says, "Doctor, I'm having a cold." So the doctor asks him, "How long have you been having it?" He says, I've been having it for a couple of days and it doesn't seem to be relenting. So the doctor says that, you know, I'll give you a suggestion. You have a cold water bath and take off your shirt and go and stand on your terrace at 3 in the morning. Okay, he says, you know, that's a very...
That sounds like a crazy cure.
Yeah, it looks like just the opposite thing to do. The doctor says, yeah, you do this, your cold will turn into a pneumonia. I have a cure for pneumonia, he says. You know, just a joke. But, you know, in science also we do that, right? Even in medication. Many times you do right the opposite in search of a cure.
And yes, that is the basis of a cancer therapy. You know, in cancer, the problem is that the cells of the body are turning malignant, and these cells need to be destroyed because these malignant cells are destroying the good cells of the human body. What do? Radiation. Radiation, which is one of the root causes for killing more number of good cells. But that is the way out. You may say that radiation also kills good cells at a faster rate than the cancer itself. But that is necessary to cure cancer. So again, you know, there are many such examples, you know, where...
The most commonly understood way... Let's say you're going to have a nice dinner tonight.
Yes.
Wouldn't you prepare for it by not eating anything the whole evening?
I think that is an example that...
More close to our heart.
Yes, because in the hostel we used to do that. You know, when we have a feast, there's an impending feast at night. Yeah, we all go low on the lunch. In fact, the menu is also prepared in such a manner that there are no, you know...
Nothing exciting for lunch.
Yeah, nothing exciting for lunch. You're talking about human lunches. If we go to our animal brothers, when they go for their lunch too, they seem to adopt this kind of, you know, attitude of moving away. If you see the lions hunting an antelope, or if you look at wild dogs chasing their prey, it's not actually lions, it's the lionesses that do the hunting. They do exactly the same. You know, they once they figure out that that is going to be their prey animal, all the animals that are going to be predatory, that is the lionesses or the wild dogs, they start spreading out, moving away from the prey. Today we know this because of amazing footage that we have got, that have captured the entire hunt in progress. The first step of the hunt is for all these predators, that is the lionesses or the wild dogs, to move away from the animal of prey. So that ultimately it is either one lioness or one wild dog that chases the quarry directly and pushes the quarry in the direction of where the others are waiting in ambush, and finally they bring it down. So again, here too, in the first step of gathering their food or getting their food, all these predators move away from the prey rather than towards it. Another example of moving away to reach the goal, to achieve the goal.
I think a famous fairy tale we all would have read when we were kids is that of the ant and the grasshopper, right? You know, the difference in approach of the ant and the grasshopper, where the grasshopper has fun all the time.
Correct.
But the ant is working hard during the summer. What is the idea
During the
spring. What is the idea of working so hard so that at winter it can rest at peace? So action, which is actually quite contradictory to having nothing to do and to have the leisure, that is exactly what you have to do to have that leisure.
You know, we talk about the ants, that's what we do also.
Right.
I mean, when we are earning well, when we are having the best of health, we take a health insurance, we start saving. Why? It seems absolutely unnecessary at that time. We are going in a direction opposite. When you are having the youth and when you are having the money, you are supposed to spend and enjoy it. But one who does that is criticized actually, you know, beyond a certain limit. So we are encouraged to do that because, again, it is in order to achieve a goal, we apparently have to move away from the goal to achieve it.
Right. I think it's a very common thing that what we do is so contradictory to what we actually want.
Hmm.
You were also giving the example of mountain climbing, right?
No,
that's
I think a very, very symbolic example as well. Because reaching the top is something that all of us want to do, not only the mountaineers. But if you look at a mountaineer, the way he reaches the top, forget a mountaineer. Even if we go to the Western Ghats, or if we go to any other mountain or hill by road also, you see the road never, if you see the direction of the road, at any point in time, the road is never pointing to the peak that we want to reach. Because in order to make it comfortable to climb, the road always goes, spirals and turns and twirls around the hill or mountain. Only at the end, at the final few meters, does the road directly point to the top.
Right.
Throughout the journey, the road is pointing away from the top. But we yet know that following that road is our only way to reach the top. So throughout the journey, just before you reach till the point when you are reaching the destination, you are always moving away from the destination. So that is another example that we see.
Right, exactly. You know, one graphic example I remember was what a warden once told us in Vrindavan. You know, he used to take the awareness class, Narsimuthi sir. So that I'm sure you remember the classroom in which we used to have. We used to call it the gallery, right? A1 gallery.
Exactly. It was the biggest classroom in the college building.
Yeah, because that was the classroom in which the whole batch used to assemble, you know, the commerce and the science together. So that was the biggest classroom. And, you know, this place where the teacher used to sit, the door used to be to the left of him.
Okay? Correct.
And position-wise, the classroom was placed just behind the Ganesha in the institute.
The main Ganesha idol.
But the door was only to his left. So one day when he was telling us, I think, something similar to this, he said, see, the Ganesha is to my right. But now if I want to go to the Ganesha, I have to take to my left. So he said, sometimes when you actually want to move towards God, you might sometimes have to take a path which is exactly opposite to that. I don't remember in what context he said it, but you know, the imagery of what he said was so strong. And
it has still remained in our memories to this day. And when you state that, I'm reminded of a famous example. I think we quoted this example when we had this discussion on means and ends. the example of Jaya and Vijaya, the two guards to Vaikuntha, that is the abode of Lord Vishnu. They anger the Saptarishis, or was it the four sons of Brahma?
Yeah, four sons of Brahma.
Sanat Kumaras, as they are called, right. The four sons of Lord Brahma, and they anger them by not allowing them to enter Vaikuntha, and so they curse these two. Having cursed them into a life that is away from the Lord, the four sons of Brahma meet the Lord. That is when Vishnu tells them that, you know, they should reconsider, and because, you know, after all, the two doorkeepers, they are harmless and they were just doing their duty. So, these four saints, sages, they say that once a word has been uttered, we can't withdraw it, but we can modify it. How do you like it to be modified? They say that either you can spend seven noble births on the earth. Mm-hmm. Because they say you're condemned to spend life on earth. Here are the options. Spend seven births as great lovers of Lord Vishnu. You will be looked up by everyone.
It's much more than seven, maybe.
I think they say seven. They say seven births as lovers of Lord Vishnu, where you will be noble and looked up by everyone. Else, spend three lives as people who hate the Lord. You will be considered as the epitome of cruelty and negativeness, and everybody will abhor you, hate you, criticize you. So which do you choose? Without, you know, even blinking or batting an eyelid, Jaya and Vijaya say that we prefer to spend three births as haters of Vishnu. And this shocks the sages, because here are two, these are the watchmen of Lord Vishnu. They are the guards at the celestial gates, and they are choosing to hate the Lord whom they apparently guard. Of course, the Lord needs no guard, but that is the job they have been given. That is when Jaya and Vijaya explain their logic. They say that, you know, we cannot stay without our Lord. We cannot imagine of a life away from Vaikuntha. So we may as well complete our punishment quickly. So they say that, you know, seven births or three births, good birth or dirty birth, doesn't matter to us. It's a punishment because we are away from the Lord. So we may as well finish the punishment fast and come back. That's why we choose three births, whatever it may be. And that is why it is said that Jaya and Vijaya were born as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, whom the Lord Vishnu killed as the Varaha avatar. They became Ravana and Kumbhakarna, whom Lord Vishnu killed as Lord Rama. And finally they became Shishupala and Dantavakra, whom Lord Vishnu killed as Shri Krishna.
Right.
So you see, on the face of it, these lovers of God chose to hate God and criticize God and become the Lord's enemies in order to achieve faster and quicker their goal of being one with their Lord again. So when you say that Narasimhamurthy sir stated that often to go to the Lord Ganesha, you have to take a road that leads you away from Ganesha. Yes, it makes quite some sense.
Right, and I mean, forgetting the philosophical part, it makes for a nice story when somebody comes to Swami, you know, as a person who did not want to come and then lands up here and then begins a journey of complete dedication. And we've done at least two or three satsangs on that theme where people come very hesitantly but were won over. And I think a story which definitely needs a repetition here is that of Mr. Seshagiri Rao. I'm sure we've narrated this incident many times over here. But you know, the idea that when he came here, he came as an escort for his daughters, and he said that I cannot accept somebody who is a Kshatriya and I'm a worshipper of Shiva. I've been a very, very sincere worshipper of Shiva. How can I accept somebody who is, after all, a village boy who is a school dropout and who is a Kshatriya? You know, that very thing which he thought did not qualify him, you know, did not allow him to go and have Swami's darshan, was the very thing which actually bound Swami to him forever. Because the first time he came, he just collapses.
Right.
He becomes unconscious. First of all, he refuses to come and see Swami. And then he comes and the first peep, he just collapses. He goes unconscious. For 3 days, he doesn't wake up. Swami just nurses him in his own room. And then when he wakes up, the first thing he says is, you all can leave. I'm not going to leave this place anymore. And that's what he says, that, you know, Swami appeared to me as Lord Shiva. That Shiva, whom I worshipped for 50 years, I've finally seen him. I am not going to be stupid to leave him and go now.
Just imagine a person who had decided that I am going to Puttaparthi only because it's a God-forsaken village and I don't know what are the dangers and troubles that my wife and daughter might face, and therefore as an escort, and I'm coming here only as an escort, don't expect me to get even involved into it 1%, even for one moment. I'm going to be totally away from all the stuff that you're going to do there. A person who is arriving with such a firm resolve, after that never ever left the land of Puttaparthi to go out anywhere else, because he said, this is where I found.
So that's exactly the case with Mr. Karanja too, right?
Correct.
Because he was a communist, a person with a communist bent of mind and a journalist. But those are the very things which got him to Swami, because his reasoning and his need as a journalist, he wanted to get to the heart of the facts. And that's what got him to Swami.
Dear listeners, the objective with which Prem and me took up this discussion is because very often, you know, we encounter people who say that, you know, I'm a devotee, I love Swami, but my father, he opposes, he doesn't like this. My husband doesn't like me worshipping Swami. My wife is against this. Or the place, the society where I live, everybody around is against Swami. We are not able to practice this fully. This is one angle of the problem. The other angle that is presented is, why does it happen like this? Why are they not able to see what we are able to see? And often it leads to us either, you know, thinking low of the people who do not believe in Swami or go away from Swami, or thinking negatively about them, thinking that they are not evolved enough, they are not good, they are not bad. It is just to remind ourselves that sometimes the master plan of the Lord is in such a manner that the plan, master plan itself, is such that it takes you away from the Lord. It seems to be taking you away from the Lord, but just like these numerous examples that we discussed before, it actually gets you back to the Lord in such a firm and strong manner that you are not able to comprehend the magic that it has done. Later on, only you will be able to see and admire it. There are two such beautiful experiences that we would like to share in this afternoon satsang about this problem that we often notice of people leaving Swami, going away from Swami, or people being blind to what you're able to see. If you are able to see the magnitude, glory and love of Swami, why is it that somebody else is blind to it? So be tuned in, because these two stories are sure to sweep you off your feet.
So that'll wait for a little while. We're going to take a short break now. We're going to play a beautiful song for you. And when we come back from the song, we're going to have more stories in the same theme.
Ik Radha, Ik Meera, Dono ne Shyam ko chaha, Antar kya Dono ki chaah mein bolo, Ik Prem Diwani, Ik Darshan Diwani, Ik Prem Diwani, Ik Darshan Diwani, Ik Radha, Ik Meera, Dono ne Shyam ko chaha, Antar kya Dono ki chaah mein bolo, Antar kya Ik Prem Diwani, Ik Darshan Diwani, Ik Prem Diwani, Ik Darshan Diwani. मधुबन में ढूंढा मीरा ने मन राधा ने मधुवन में ढूंढा, मीरा ने मन में पाया। राधा जिसे खो बैठे वो गोविंद, मीरा हाथ बिछाए। एक रानी एक दासी, दोनों हरी प्रेम की प्यासी। अंतर क्या दोनों की प्रीत में बोलो, अंतर क्या दोनों की प्रीत में बोलो। एक सूरत लुभानी एक मूरत लुभानी, एक सूरत लुभानी एक मूरत लुभानी। एक राधा एक मीरा, मीरा के प्रभु गिरिधर नागर, राधा के मन मोहन। सागम पधा पधम पर मगर गर सानी परे, रे गम गम पम पध पध सानी परे। आ जीत न माने एक हार न माने, एक जीत न माने एक हार न माने। एक राधा एक मीरा, दोनों ने श्याम को चाहा। अंतर क्या दोनों की चाह में बोलो, प्रेम दीवानी एक दर्श दीवानी, एक प्रेम दीवानी एक दर्श दीवानी।
वेलकम बैक डियर लिसनर्स, एंड वी जस्ट होप दैट यू हर्ड द सॉन्ग दैट वाज प्लेड जस्ट बिफोर दिस, because that song is so beautiful. It speaks about two devotees of the Lord, one Radha and one Meera. And anybody who has read the story of Radha and Meera will know that it becomes very difficult to compare them and say who loves the Lord best. Both will be joint first if we have to say who loves Krishna more, because Radha's love is supreme for Krishna and Meera's love is supreme for Krishna. And yet, if we look at their lives and the way they acted it out, I mean, the way they did their actions, it is so different. One is a queen, the other a beggar, almost a beggar. The other one decked herself in order to present herself most beautifully to the Lord. The other wore almost no ornamentation at all, for she knew that the Lord looks for the inner beauty. While one worshipped him in his life form, the other worshipped the idol. While one never accepted defeat to Lord, that is, Meera never accepted defeat to the Lord, Radha never accepted victory over the Lord. The whole world said, Radha, you have won over the Lord. She said, no. And the whole world screamed at Meera, you have lost. She said, no. I mean, their approaches were absolutely, totally opposite. And yet, both of them are considered as the greatest lovers of Lord Krishna. Now for a moment, if we just ponder, if the way the devotee loves the Lord can be so diametrically opposite, is it not possible that the way the Lord loves the devotee too can be in the same way diametrically opposite? Is it not possible that in order to express his supreme, pure, divine love, Swami takes one very close to him? At the same time, in order to express that same supreme, divine and pure love, Swami pushes someone very far away from him? So, you know, today's topic is going to be along these lines of going away from the destination to reach the destination. I'm just reminded of one small anecdote that happened in the life of Sri Raman Rao.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the foremost among the Sevadal, and in fact he received his Sevadal badge from Swami. He was an atheist and he was on his first visit to Puttaparthi, and he was hastily drawing so many conclusions as he saw the sights all around. So one of the first things that he saw was when Swami came for darshan, he picked up some people and he noticed that five among them were rich, well-to-do, affluent kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
Two among them seemed to be, you know, poor and not well-to-do. So he thought, oh, most of the people who get interviewed are rich people. So this Baba just takes poor people as a token. That was his thought. And after darshan, you know, there used to be the interviews during which it is free time. And if you remember those days, most of us would go for having breakfast. And so Raman Rao also said, you know, now I'll go for breakfast, I'm hungry. He had come along with his friend who said, no, I would like to sit here. Raman Rao sir thought that, you know, this person is mad. He's giving up his breakfast or something like this. He goes, has breakfast and comes back. And when he's back from breakfast, he sees that the interviews have concluded and the people are coming out. He goes to them and asks what it is. He sees in the hand of one person there are three rings.
Mm-hmm.
And he points to a fourth ring and says, this Swami gave this ring, you know, saying that all the worries, problems will be gone. He says, oh, okay. In the meanwhile, two of them slip out because they don't want to talk about the experience. But he speaks to these three people and all three of them are well-to-do. One is a businessman, other is from nobility. From royalty. He's from a royal family. So each of them, Swami has given them different things. And Raman Rao, sir, listens to all this. He comes back. When he comes to his seat, he sees one poor person.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he's from Orissa, from the state of Orissa. And he has mistaken Raman Rao sir to be somebody from the ashram. Because he thinks that, you know, he was speaking to all the people who came out of the interview room.
Mm-hmm.
So he confuses him to be somebody like a trustee or a chairperson of the ashram or something. So he walks up to him and asks, sir, will Swami speak to me tomorrow? So Raman Rao sir doesn't know what is happening. So he looks at him and tells, hey, you were there, right, among those whom Swami picked for interview? What happened? He says, sir, what do I say? I'm a very, very poor person from Orissa. And I had made all the plans necessary to get my daughter married.
Mm-hmm.
And when I wanted to get her married, naturally, I got a silk sari for her. I got some silk dhoti and silk cloth for my going-to-be son-in-law. I had purchased the golden Mangal Sutra, you know, which the Indian women wear as the sign of their wedding. And I had also gathered about 1,200 rupees in cash. This is what I'm talking about in the 1970s. So 1,200 rupees was a big deal those days. So he said about 1,200 rupees in cash. And all of this was in a cover. And a week before the wedding, there was a burglary and this was stolen. So then Raman Rao sir says, so why did you come here? You should go to the police. He says, yeah, I went to the police and I know what the police will do. Nothing will come out of it. Last year I had come and met Sai Baba. I had met Swami. And you know, I am convinced that Swami will help me. And that's why I have come, because I have no other place to go. I don't know. I can never gather back all that I have gathered. So when he says this, Raman Rao sir then asks him, then what happened? He says, sir, when I went to the interview room, seeing Swami, seeing those compassionate eyes, nothing came from my mouth. I just began to weep inconsolably. I didn't speak a word. I was just crying and I began to sob. And when I began sobbing, you know, the whole decorum of the place was disturbed, I think, because I was crying so badly. Swami just patted me on my shoulder, opened the interview room door and said, please go out. And that's why, I don't know, I just got overwhelmed. I'm just hoping that, is it possible that tomorrow I may get an interview? When Raman Rao sir heard this, you know, his mind was again making all the conclusions. He said, you know, this person, he came to seek help. And instead of helping this, this Baba is giving rings to all those well-to-do people. And this person who really needs his help, what does he do? He sends him out of the interview room. So he immediately goes to his friend and says, look what injustice your Baba has done. So then his friend says, see, we don't know whether that is a true story. He might be just telling this to, you know, win some kind of kindness and get something. You don't know if he's lying. You don't know whether he's a cheat. So Raman Rao sir gets furious. He says, you don't give such kind of justification for the injustice that your Baba has done. Okay. Mm-hmm. You can listen to this man, to his plain voice, and know that he is not lying. He is genuinely in trouble. So then the friend, he doesn't know how to defend his Swami. So he says, then maybe it's an opportunity for us to help. Let us help him in whatever way possible. So, you know, Raman Rao sir takes out a princely sum of 50 rupees and says, this is what I can contribute, but I'll give this. I'll help him. His friend also takes out 50 rupees from his pocket. And so they decide that they will give him at least 100 rupees. And then Raman Rao sir writes in his book that as he went to help that person, Professor Kasturi comes walking out. Mm-hmm. And he is calling out, Jagannath, 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 who is Jagannath? And even as he is calling out, this person from Orissa stands up. So the Raman Rao sir's friend puts a hand on Raman Rao sir and says, you know, just wait. Don't give him that money. Kasturi, Professor Kasturi comes to him and gives him a cover and says, Swami said that you were crying, that you could not express, you could not speak to him what you wanted to speak. But Swami says he knows your heart and he has sent this for you. So the man accepts the cover and opens it, and inside there is a silk sari. He pulls out the silk sari, and Raman Rao sir is seeing this. He pulls out the silk sari. After that, he pulls out a silk dhoti with angavastram for the groom. And then Kasturi points out and says, inside the cover. He puts his hand and pulls out an envelope. He opens the envelope, and Raman Rao is able to see from there that there is a wad of currency notes. He's sure all of them are 100 rupee notes, and he's sure that it's at least double the amount what he had actually lost. At least 2500 rupees are there. He's sure of it. And as the man is now shedding tears, again he's shedding tears. You know, that is the magic that the Lord does. Converts tears of sorrow into tears of joy. Kasturi again points out to the envelope. And then when he sees inside the envelope is one beautiful Mangal Sutra in gold. And this time, Raman Rao sir is almost moved to tears. He is shocked. And then Kasturi says to this man, Swami said that you have come here without telling anybody. Everybody there is worried about you. You know, this was a time when there was no cell phones or nothing like that. Everybody is worried about you. Go back quickly. And Swami says that you are conducting some marriage, therefore he has sent all this. He says his blessings are there. You need not travel here again because it's an expensive thing for you to travel. Swami sends his blessings to you there. And then Jagannath gets up with tears of joy and big smile beaming on his face, walks away, and also offers a salute to Raman Rao sir, who is standing there, because he thinks that Raman Rao sir is, you know, a person of... And Raman Rao sir is just bold, and he writes in his book that I just took that paltry amount, petty amount that I was thinking of giving him and put it back in my pocket. Who am I to give when here was Swami giving without him? So you see, it looked on the face of it like as if Swami is sending him out of the interview room. But it only led to a much more bountiful shower of love and grace. Unless we are able to see the overall big picture, unless we are able to see the whole picture, we will not be able to appreciate it. And most of the times, we do not appreciate things because we are not able to see this big picture.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, from what you said, as a devotee, our duty is to not have doubts. Mm-hmm. But if you have in your vicinity somebody who is having doubts, it is not your duty to jump into conclusions that they have fallen away.
Mm-hmm.
Because as Swami has told many times, once I've taken hold of your hand, I never let go.
Mm.
So I think all those people who think that, you know, this person has fallen off and this person has gone wayward, it is the same thing. We are seeing that small picture and not seeing the bigger picture.
Mm.
And maybe we just have to give it some time to realize that it's just the journey has taken a different turn.
Mm.
You know, as Swami would often say that when a road is being mended, you know, there is a detour which is created so that the road is given enough time to be repaired. And Swami would often say that when he doesn't talk to a person.
Correct. He would say that when I don't speak to a person, it's like avoiding a main road and taking a detour. The idea is not to avoid the road. The idea is to give the road time to, so that the repair works proceed fast.
Faster.
And I can start using the road once again.
Right. And you know, when talking of all these things, one thing is, many people have faced this. Many devotees come to Swami and say that, Swami, you know, my husband is not devoted to you.
Mm.
Or my children are not devoted to you.
Mm.
My parents are not devoted to you. You know, many people have that problem. And I think it would be a nice point to narrate the experience of one person who came. And I think it happened in our time when we were students and we've seen a part of the story unfold in front of us.
Mm.
That of how the Belgian prince, and more than her, the Belgian prince, the Belgian princess, their mother, how she was drawn to Swami.
Oh, okay.
A very interesting story. This lady, one of the many princesses in Belgium, she was a very devout Christian. And she always prayed to Jesus. And she was a person of very pure heart, very devoted. And as Swami would say later, she was very dharmic. That's what Swami had told.
Mm.
But this lady was very often having a very recurrent dream.
Okay.
You know, in that dream, there are no surprises here. A man in an orange robe with a halo of hair was coming and telling her, come to Puttaparthi, come to Puttaparthi.
Okay.
And she was somehow, you know, pushing aside this dream because she could realize that this was some spiritual personage who was coming to draw her close to himself.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought it would be unfaithful to Christ if she would go to a person like this.
Okay.
So she just kept on ignoring this thing which kept coming to her. One day she met an old friend of hers. And, you know, they were just exchanging pleasantries and talking about old times.
Mm-hmm.
When this friend suddenly told her that, you know, I've met a person in India, a spiritual master.
Okay.
And I've taken him to be my guru.
Mm.
And I've taken him, I've traveled to his ashram in India and I've taken him to be my guru.
Mm.
So, the moment she hears the word India, she says, India, you know, have you heard of a place called Puttaparthi in India? That's what the Belgian princess asks. Have you heard of a place called Puttaparthi? And this lady shocked, the friend. He says, how did you get the name so correct? Because that's exactly the person I'm mentioning.
Mm.
You know, his name is Sai Baba. And she pulls out a picture and shows it to her. And says, he's the man I met. I mean, he's the guru I met and whom I've accepted. So now the Belgian princess is shocked.
Okay.
She says, he's the man who's been coming in my dream in telling me to come to Puttaparthi. So they both of them are surprised by the thing. And so they decide that let's travel to Swami.
Mm.
So a week later, they boarded the flight. They're traveling towards Puttaparthi.
Oh, only the princess and her friend.
Yeah, only the princess and her friend.
Hmm.
And all the while her friend is telling her stories about Swami that she's heard and she's experienced. And this princess is absolutely confused. She doesn't know what to make of this whole event which is happening. You know, who is this person who is doing all kinds of Christ-like miracles?
Hmm.
And is it right for a Christian, a devout Christian, to travel to India to see a person like this?
Hmm.
And all these doubts are going. They land in India. They drive down to Puttaparthi. And they very casually go to the accommodation office and take a room for accommodation and they go in. You know, they must have been in one of the north blocks.
This is the Princess of Belgium.
Princess of Belgium.
Okay.
In the meanwhile, the Belgium High Commission calls up the External Affairs Ministry of India and tells them that, you know, the Her Highness, the Princess of Belgium, is traveling to India. She's gone to Puttaparthi to meet Sai Baba. So then the Ministry of External Affairs calls up the PR in ashram and tells that, you know, the Princess of Belgium is there in the ashram.
Oh, that was why she was shifted to the Sai Srinivas
right,
guest house.
After they hunted for her and they found that staying like another devotee and she was asked to move to the guest house for VIPs. And the next day, promptly she was made to sit in the first row in the darshan.
You know, Prem, I feel this kind of humility and sweetness, I feel that is why, you know, Swami wanted... Swami is also in search of a devotee, they say, right?
Absolutely.
What a really humble lady.
Right. And so there, you know, the first darshan, and she was all heart filled with trepidation. You know, what is Swami going to say? Is Swami going to come and recognize her, or going to treat her like just another stranger who has just come in? And what do I tell Swami? What do I ask him? You know, you can imagine all the thoughts which would be running in a devotee who's been drawn this way. So she's sitting there and Swami comes for darshan, and Swami stops just before her and is talking to a devotee who is sitting beside her. And so she sees that everybody is taking padnamaskar, everybody is touching Swami's feet. So she thinks that maybe that's the protocol, that's what you're supposed to do. So she bends and touches Swami's feet. Immediately Swami looks at her, pats her on her head. "So you have come." That's what Swami says. And so she's surprised, you know, that Swami has recognized her. Then Swami invites her and her friend for an interview. So in the interview, the first thing Swami does is, Swami materializes two medallions, and both with an image of Jesus Christ, and gives it to both these ladies. You know, both are Jesus Christ images, but had a slight difference. The one which Swami gave the princess had the picture of Christ on the cross only till the waist.
Okay.
The one which Swami gave the friend had a regular picture of Jesus Christ on the cross, the whole picture.
Okay.
And then Swami went on to say that, "I know that you are very, very devoted to Christ." Okay, and Swami said, "It is because of your devotion to Christ that I have drawn you here." Because you are a very sincere devotee, I have drawn you here. And then Swami goes on to say that when you are 5 years old, you saw the movie Jesus of Nazareth. And Swami says that is when your attachment to Jesus actually was born. And then Swami says that the scene where Jesus was crucified, that scene troubled you so much that you started crying then. And then Swami said that scene where Jesus' feet were nailed to the cross, that was a scene which you couldn't take at all. And Swami said after that you went and cried for 2 days just imagining that one scene. And Swami said, "Because it gave you so much pain, I gave you a picture of Jesus where the crucifixion image is only till the waist." Swami said, "I don't want you to give you something which will trouble you and which will make you cry."
But in that concern, he also showed his omnipresence.
Exactly, you know, that's what shocked her more than the concern then. She said, "How did Swami know this?" Because she had not shared it with anybody else. You know, crying for 2 days, seeing that scene, and how that movie had made such a strong impact on her. And you know, she was so moved by all this. Then Swami said, "See, that is why I'm so happy with you, because of all the devotion that you've shown, and because you're a very dharmic person." That's when Swami tells her that you've stuck to your duties very relentlessly and with so much of
sincerity.
And then Swami tells her, "No, ask me what you want. I'm very happy with you. Ask me whatever you want, I'll give you." And she didn't know what to ask, but the first thought which came to her mind were about the two sons who were studying in Harvard at that time.
Okay.
She had two young sons who were studying in Harvard. The problem was they were not devoted to Jesus, and they were agnostics.
Oh, they were agnostics.
And she was thinking that, should I ask about them? Because that was the thing which was topmost in her mind. That they were not coming to church with her, and they were not having that.
They didn't believe in God.
Didn't believe in God. Didn't have that spiritual bent of mind. But she didn't ask. The next thing Swami said was, "You want to ask about your sons who are in Harvard?"
Oh, okay.
Okay, and then Swami says, "Ask. Why are you hesitating?" So then, you know, she's so overwhelmed, she falls at Swami's feet and she says, "Yes, Swami, it troubles me that they are not believers of God." So then Swami says, "You do one thing. After this interview, you go back and you call them up and tell them about me." That's what Swami says. "You call them up tonight and tell them about me, whatever you've experienced here. And you tell me what they say tomorrow." So that night she goes and she calls up her sons. And the next morning Swami comes and calls them for an interview and say, "What did your sons say? Did you tell them about me?" So very hesitantly she says, "Swami, I did tell them, but they just hung up the phone. They said, you keep your fantasies to yourself. We don't want any bit of it." Swami says, "Is that what they said? You do one thing. Again, you call them up today. Okay, and tell them that Swami said he'll give them an experience." Okay, tell them that Sai Baba told that he'll give them an experience. And you tell me what they said tomorrow.
Okay.
So she again calls up, and then this time they're all the more wild. They hang up the phone and she's very troubled and she's wondering how to tell this to Swami. You know, it's such impertinence on their part. So the next morning Swami comes with a twinkle in his eye and he says, "What did they say?" So she said, "Swami, this is what happened." Swami says, "Don't worry, you call up now. They will tell you what happened." Okay, and so after the darshan they rush, they call up. And you know what has happened? these two boys, they were sitting in a class in Harvard when an orange light came and stuck to this boy's shirt, the elder son's shirt. You know, something on the shirt, an orange light. So this boy gets up and tries to see where is this light coming from. And then the orange light starts chasing him.
Wherever he goes.
Yes, and this was a scene the whole class saw.
Oh.
This prince being chased by this orange light. And that scene, this boy is running, this orange light is chasing him, and the whole class is actually running after that light. And at one point they're totally exhausted, they all fall. The light circles around them and just vanishes into the air. Okay, and this was a scene the entire class saw. So then when she heard this thing, that evening Darshan, she comes. And before she could tell it to Swami, so Swami says, so did your boys tell about that orange light?
Okay.
And immediately Swami called them for an interview. And in the interview she said, Swami, the whole class wants to come and see you.
Oh, okay.
So Swami said, no, time has not yet come for that. But when the time comes, I will call your two sons here.
Okay.
And I'm sure you will remember that when we were in first or second year.
I thought they were her brothers or something.
Yeah, they were her sons.
Oh, okay.
Actually, those two princes, you know, when, I think many, there were, during that summer, the summer of 2000, I think.
Exactly. You know, they said that the prince and the princess from Belgium are there. The prince, the two princes and the princess of Belgium. So therefore, I assume they must be cousins or something like that. Yeah. I didn't know it was mother and sons.
Right. And I remember how much attention Swami gave when they were there. They used to even come for thrice sessions.
Correct.
A couple of their thrice sessions, they were invited.
Huh.
And I still remember one or two dramas which were staged in the Kalyan Mandapam then. Those two boys were sitting around and Swami was explaining the whole script to them. Because I think the drama was in Telugu or Kannada.
Which they can't understand.
And it's scene after scene Swami was explaining to those boys.
Yes, I remember those beautiful moments.
You know, but imagine Swami goes to Belgium and draws the mother. And then after the mother comes, Swami goes to Harvard and draws the children. And if you look at any one particular moment in this entire narrative, it is so difficult to understand the entire plan, right?
Very right. You just cannot understand. And one more thing that strikes when you listen to this narrative is that when Swami wishes to pull you, it's He pulls you. It is not as if we chose to believe in God, we chose not to believe in God. It is the Lord who chose to pull us or keep us away. And knowing our Lord, we should have faith that whether He chooses to pull us to Him or keep us away from Him, both are for our ultimate good. This kind of attitude helps in two ways. One is, it helps us to accept whatever situation we are in. Second thing is, it helps us not to get judgmental about people who are atheists or who are agnostics. It's no problem, because that is the way that they are receiving Lord's love, and this is the way we are receiving Lord's love. What a lovely experience you shared, Prem. Thank you so much, because it felt so lovely listening to it. And it also feels lovely listening to the Leela of the Lord. The beautiful thing about experience with Swami is, of course, the lesson is there. But even if we miss the lesson at times, just listening to that experience is so ennobling and makes us remember that orange light. How I wish, you know, it starts chasing us here in the studio. Instead of running away from it, we will run towards it. But well, one more beautiful experience coming up. But after we take this little break, be tuned in. We'll be back.
Kab loge khabar more raam? Kab loge khabar more raam? Kab loge khabar more raam?
Amazing grace. How sweet the sound that saved a soul like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found, was blind. Fear, release.
That famous Amazing Grace song, which has been rendered so many times, and this is the Dana Gillespie version of the Amazing Grace. You know, literally Amazing Grace.
You know, the amazing thing about grace is that it can come to us in ways that we never imagine. And maybe we'll conclude this afternoon satsang with this incident.
Mm-hmm.
I heard it, I've heard this many times, and I've heard it from the person who went through this. His name is Amay Deshpande, and he's literally like a Sai brother to me. I feel he's a brother gifted to me by Swami. And this incident is life-changing for him, and it appeared to be life-shattering. That's the thing. Imagine something that is life-shattering turns out to be life-changing. Well, he joined, you know, he came to know about Swami in 1970s, and that is when his family came to Swami. And one thing led to another, and soon he found himself in the primary school. In the primary school for his sixth grade. He joined there for sixth standard. And you know, a kind of mad love for Swami, it seemed to be there in him from his childhood days itself. And there are many experiences that he had even before he joined the primary school with Swami. Not only the omnipresent Swami, with also the physical Swami. We will go into those experiences some other time. But basically, when he joined the school, his focus was all Swami. Now, isn't that the focus for every child? Of course, yes, Swami is the focus. But Amay seemed a little extra special, and he would do anything possible in his energy and capacity to, you know, to win the love of Swami, to become dear to Swami. Mm-hmm. He wanted to go close to Swami, and he seemed to be succeeding in that too, because Swami also started showering his attention on him. Speaking to him, you know, every now and then Swami used to come and ask about what is the food in primary school. That used to be Amay. And he would call a group of students to take prasadam for distribution. One among them would definitely be Amay. And many such things, you know. In fact, you know the term that we use in the hostel, the form boy.
Right.
We say a person who is receiving attention from Swami is a form boy. So Amay was considered as one of the prime form boys of his class. And this form, that is his proximity, took a 100-fold leap through a disaster, you know. what happened was he had severe stomachache one day. And when he went to the hospital, he was diagnosed with appendicitis.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very painful and he was scared at the prospects of him being cut up, you know. It's an operation that needs cutting and suturing. So with a lot of worry, he told Swami that, Swami, this is what it is. And Swami was so loving. Swami embraced him and comforted him and said, you don't worry. Nothing, it'll all be fine. Swami will take care. He called doctors and specifically spoke to them about it. This was in the December of 1992. And specially ensured that care should be taken. And, you know, Swami was monitoring this patient. And his appendicitis won him so much of love and grace from Swami. Finally, his operation was scheduled on, I think, December 24th, one day after his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And the operation went on fine. And Swami was constantly inquiring about him, sent vibhuti for him, sent prasadam for him, so much. And every day the doctors had something or the other there, you know, Swami was asking about this, Swami asked about this. And he was so happy and, you know, imagine being in the hospital and knowing that Swami, and this hospital was, you know, just 1 year old at that time, 1991, Swami had inaugurated the super specialty hospital.
Right.
So it was bliss for him, you know, to be the apple of the eye of the Lord. In fact, he would not want to even go home. But in primary school, you're not allowed to stay back, just like how we are allowed in the institute hostels. So he would wait for the vacation to end, or he would tell his parents to come to India so that he can spend his time with Swami, because Swami was his everything. And he saw the fulfillment of a lifelong desire, whatever short his life had been till then. His lifelong desire was to be with Swami, and that was happening with each passing day. In fact, on January 1st, the doctors came to know that Swami would be visiting the super speciality hospital.
Okay.
He used to make regular visits. So they requested, and the thing was, on 31st of December, Amai was discharged. But the doctors of the urology section of the hospital, they said to Amai that, you know, if you are in the hospital, there's a high probability that Swami will visit the urology ward. Not high probability, compulsory Swami will come to see you. And therefore, all of us will get blessed. So please, can we delay your discharge to tomorrow?
I mean, they held him back for one day only for that purpose.
For that purpose, yeah. Because medically he was fit to be discharged.
Okay.
So Amai agreed, and therefore he was retained. And as they had expected, Swami visited the next day. Mm-hmm. And Swami headed straight to the urology section. Why? Because his dear Amai was there, recuperating, convalescing. So he went and spoke to Amai. Swami spoke to Amai again, blessed him and told him not to worry, that he will be back in hostel soon. And Amai was said that he was just smiling to himself, because he knew that he had to already be in hostel. He was not worried about anything. He was just enjoying the divine love and grace that Swami was showering on him. And the doctors too got their chances. In fact, the next day, Swami sent his own personal white Mercedes car to pick up Amai from the hospital and drop him to the hostel.
God, wow, that's something.
You can imagine, Amai became a hero, an instant celebrity in the hostel, because nobody had received such physical attention and grace from Swami.
And at that age.
At that age, imagine. He did his best, of course, to keep a sane head above his shoulders. And you know, then every single opportunity, when Swami visited hostel and Swami was sitting on the jhula, he called out to Amai and another boy to sit specially on the platform that had been made for Swami, while all the other boys sat down. You know, this speciality, this partiality towards Amai was there for all to see. And everyone wondered, what is it in Amai that is, you know, we also want to become like him. Everybody wanted to become like him and get close to Swami. And they tried to imitate whatever he was doing. In an exhibition also, you know, an exhibition was made, and Swami, that exhibition was mainly done by the 12th grade and 10th grade students, and Swami was visiting them.
Okay.
No, because Amai was there in the 9th, 8th grade, the 8th grade and 9th grade students also put up an exhibition, and Swami visited that exhibition too.
Mm-hmm.
Spent half an hour there, out of which 1 minute was at Amai's exhibit. You know, Swami spent so much time, patted him on his cheek, told him that he had done a good job. What his exhibit was about is another story, but Swami spent time there. In fact, you know, Amai was told that for next year's exhibition also prepare some exhibit, because, you know, that will be the one that will captivate Swami. So all this was going on, just imagine. And after his 8th grade, he goes home for the summer vacations. He was staying in Muscat at that time. So when he goes home, he's preparing, you know, for the next year's exhibit. And they also had a summer project to do, which was read the entire Satya Sai Speaks Volume 5 and summarize it.
Okay.
Can you imagine that? And he was halfway through that as well. So he was ideal in every way, you know, good in whether it's in sports or academics or cultural activities or being dear to Swami, a perfect kind of all-rounder. One day, you know, he happened to get into a kind of slight argument with his father.
Mm-hmm.
And in the course of his argument, his father shouted at him and said, "Just shut up. It is this kind of talking that has got you expelled from the school." What? And when Amai heard that, he was just shocked. What? He was just, you know, stammering. He couldn't get words. Father said, "Yes, you have been kicked out of school."
Oh God.
He was shocked. You know, he could not believe. Then the father shows him a letter in which it is said that Amai has been expelled because of three reasons. One, excessive talking. Two, unnecessary contacts and friendship. Three, medical reasons.
My God. I mean, it was a letter sent to his house, not what was given to the parents when they picked him up or something.
No, no. It was a letter sent to his house telling, please don't get your word back because he has been expelled. So, for these three reasons, that's it. And Amai's father, in order to shield him and to release that shock gently, he had not told him about it. But when this came, then Amai was arguing, he thought this is a time to send home this lesson. That
talking about amazing grace, this is amazing fall from grace.
Yes.
This is just from the peaks to the
nadir. And Amai was just shocked, shell-shocked. He could not believe it. He was just trying to think which teacher might have gone and complained in what manner about these to Swami. He said medical reasons, everyone knew. Swami himself took care of his medical problem and he was fit in every other way.
It was a one-time problem, it's not like a recurring
one. And talking and friendships, he was wondering what was it that was going wrong. And, you know, he started thinking of the different teachers in school, because till then it was primary school. He had just shifted over for 8th grade to higher secondary school.
Right.
So he was thinking that there are some people who are jealous. And, you know, a complaint, and he was thinking, and, you know, a lot of anger towards different teachers.
I mean, that's the first thing, right? I mean, negative thoughts come when wrong things happen.
Exactly.
You just forget all the nice things which teachers have done to you, and that's what really happens. A little boy, too.
And the little boy, what he was thinking was, this is what the teachers do.
Right.
They have forgotten what an ideal he has been, and just with some small vendetta agenda, they've forgotten all his good and all the love that Swami has showered in him and have painted him black. This was his conclusion. Just as we think that we forget the good the teachers have done, he felt that the teachers had forgotten all the good that he had done. He began to cry and cry and cry. And, you know, Amai's parents, amazing, you know, hats off to them also. They told him that, you know, come what may, even if the Lord kicks us, we will not let go of his feet. We will not let go of the feet that is kicking us also, because we have no other refuge. Anyata sharanam nasti twamyeva sharanam mama. So they decided to come to Puttaparthi. And well, you know, Prem, in 1993, the June of 1993, there were some episodes in Puttaparthi because of which the alumni were no longer allowed to sit in the special place that had been allocated to them.
Okay.
And because of that, Amai now came, he was no longer a current student. He's an alumnus.
The little bit of access which was there also is no more.
He's cut now. So he's not able to sit in front, and he's wondering, Swami, what is this happening? What is this happening? And so he was crying out, and Swami immediately moved to Vrindavan.
Mm-hmm.
He went to Vrindavan as well, and there also the same rule continued that you are not allowed to sit. The alumni have no special seating. If you are a student, you can sit. Otherwise, if you are an alumni, go sit with the devotees. So that special access is gone, and Amai was just thinking, Swami, just give me one chance to get in physical touch with you. I want to tell you, Swami, that such a grave injustice has been done to me. Do something. Nearly a few weeks passed, nothing happened. After which, you know, Amai's father told him that, you know, we have to get along with life. If it's already academic year has begun elsewhere in our part of the world there. If you don't go back, you will be neither here nor there. You will be wasting a year. So they returned back. And thankfully, he says, for him, his father got a transfer from Muscat to Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
And when they went to Abu Dhabi, he felt like a relief, because there were none of these people whom he knew who would come and ask, what happened? Why are you not in Swami school?
Who knew about his glorious time also.
Yes. And so immediately it will be a fall from grace. Because when he was in Puttaparthi and Vrindavan, none of the teachers spoke to him. None of his friends spoke to him. He had already become an outcast. And he feared the same would happen back home. But luckily, that was a small respite. He got transferred to Abu Dhabi. He tried in 11th grade to get into the school, but well, you know, the same bias continued. He didn't get his admission. He tried to get into BCom, into the institute, but that did not happen because they said that NRIs will not be taken into the institute. That time it was some kind of a problem with the government at that time. He decided to continue his, you know, graduation in Bangalore. Mm-hmm. He continued with his graduation in Bangalore and in the Sheshadripuram College he was studying. And in the meanwhile, he had developed and flowered into a beautiful singer. So he joined the Sevadal singing group in Bangalore. That privileged group which gets the chance to sing to Swami. That's the only Sevadal group, I think, anywhere in the world that gets to sing in front of Swami, because all others, it's only the students.
Right.
But we know in Vrindavan, every Thursday, every Sunday, the bhajans are by the Sevadal. And he became the best singer of the group. But he was not satisfied. His objective was, he wanted to get close to Swami. And in his mind, he had this thought that being a student is the best way to be closest to Swami. So he would beg and plead and pray in his heart, Swami, just give me one more chance, just one more chance, just one more chance. And he thought that his best chance would be the MBA course, the professional MBA course. He applied for it once or twice, and both times he didn't get it, he didn't make it. So he continued, he was happy with that life. Swami too began to speak to him. So things apparently had improved between, in the sense he got back his access to Swami because it had been cut off. So he did not bother that the teachers and others are not speaking to him. He felt this is a new life now. He continued with his new life. In fact, you know, he has two names. He's either called Indraneel or Amay. So the name, with the name Indraneel, he went on, and he went on in the bhajan group. He became a good singer, all the while pining for this chance to get one more opportunity to be a student, because he felt, Swami, I want to show the world that I am an ideal student. You know how ideal I am, Swami. Give me one more chance. Just give me one more chance. I'll show the world. I'll show those people who you know, spoke ill of me behind my back and got me thrown out. I'll show them that I'm really an ideal student, that I love you. I can't live without you. That was his prayer. And that year when he came to Puttaparthi, things seemed to be improving more and more. You know, he got an interview. Not one, but two interviews. In fact, Swami called him out from the lines, darshan lines, by addressing him as a appendicitis boy.
Oh.
So he felt thrilled that Swami remembered, you know. And the thing is, you know, Swami called him and said, where are you? He said, Swami, Swami said, why did you leave Swami and go? Swami appeared so pained. And he almost broke down, you know. Amay almost broke down thinking, oh, Swami. He didn't want to tell that, Swami, you know, there are some people who have complained like this. They threw me out. They threw me out and they said all these stupid reasons. I could not get access and tell you about it. And Swami continued to say, you know, your other friends, they all studied here, they're all happy. Why did you leave and go? And then, you know, Swami gave him those interviews, so he was thrilled. After the interview, his stock price had risen. You know, Amay says that's literally like stock price. Because, you know, his intrinsic value is the same, but based on speculation, either you are valued or devalued. Suddenly now everybody wanted to speak to him. Those teachers who avoided him came and started speaking to him. He just avoided everybody and kept to himself. But when his former best friend came to him and spoke to him, he could not hold any longer. He said, you know what? I have been the same always, but you are treating me differentially. Just because Swami spoke to me, now you are speaking to me. Don't. You are a very selfish guy. And then the friend said something which shattered Amay. Shattered him completely. He said, you know what? After you left the school, we asked our teacher, why was Amay sent? Why was he expelled? And then the teacher said that year after the admissions, when they took all the lists to Swami, Swami specifically asked, which is the appendicitis boy? Who is the appendicitis boy? So they thought that Swami had some glorious plans for him.
Okay.
And they pointed out to his roll number. You know, he was not a new recruit. He was not a newly admitted boy student, because ninth grade is an automated process you go into from eighth grade.
Right.
But Swami asked for him, got his sheet, got his roll number, and with a pen just struck off his name and said, this boy need not be here. And gave no reasons whatsoever. So they had to cook up some reasons. And then the boy said that, see, we thought that Swami, means we knew that Swami is upset with you. So if we associate ourselves with you, Swami will be upset with us. Now that Swami is happy with you and he has called you for an interview, we are coming back. We have nothing against you. Swami, you know, Amay was totally down in the dumps. He felt like he had been backstabbed. till now, you know, it actually, he felt it was better that he thought that the teachers had plotted against him, his friends had done against him. Now, the one who considered his life goal, whom he had considered as his life goal, had done this. And he felt so, so miserable, he just did not know what to do. He just left Prashant Puttaparthi, went, he wanted some time by himself to come in terms with the situation. You know, speaking of this, I am reminded of that song that was composed during the convocation drama in 2005, I think, where the hero's plight is similar to this, where he says that I am in such a trouble and the Lord doesn't seem to be speaking to me also about this. Where do I go? What do I do? We'll come to the conclusion of the story after this song.
हिम्मत न हार जाना तकदीर तुझे रुलाए तो क्या औरों को न रुलाना बेहाल है दिल में हिम्मत न हार जाना मंजिल मेरी उस ओर खड़ी पैरों पे जंजीर पड़ी
Do I really have a choice? Oh Lord, why have you forsaken me?
भगवान भी बोलता नहीं अब मन मेरा लगता नहीं क्या करूं मजबूर हूं बेकसूर हूं सुन ले मेरी ये आरज़ू राह दिखा दे
You know, his heart was crying out just like the heart of the protagonist of that drama, you know. He was thinking that, Swami, till now I thought it was these people, the world that had plotted against me. But Swami, you did this to me. You sent me out, Swami, when, why? I mean, these questions formed a whirlpool in his head, in his heart. He did not know answers for these. But one thing, you know, being the positive-minded individual that he is, he resolved that, Swami, I thought I have to prove to the world. If I have to prove to you, Swami, please give me one more chance. I'll prove to you that I'm a good student. I'll prove to you that I'm an ideal. I'll prove to you that I'm the child that you seek. Please give me one more chance. Please give me one more chance. And this was his constant prayer again and again and again. And in 2003, he got a seat for the MBA, course at Prashant Vinilium. And you know, that's how I came into contact with him. He was my classmate. I was doing my MSc. He was doing his MBA. And I did not know that he had carried along with him such a huge baggage of 10 years, a decade away from Swami. I just knew him as a singer from the bhajan group in Vrindavan. In college, in the hostel also, he was so different from all of us, you know. So, such a stickler for discipline, always the ideal kind of boy, whom we feel that, come on man, don't be so ideal. I mean, it's fine if you have a little fun, but he was no. It looked like he had a point to prove to somebody, and we never knew who that somebody is. Today I know it was Swami. But he was a kind of ideal, and after that he joined the Master of Philosophy course, and decided to do his doctorate. I remember Swami calling him and telling him, do you really want to do doctorate? He said, yes, Swami. You know, all his conversations with Swami had such a philosophical and otherworldly touch. Swami told him, you know, the degree the institute will give you off, the doctorate institute will give you off, but Swami's PhD is not easy. Are you ready for Swami's PhD? He said, yes, Swami, I'm ready. Swami said, okay. You know, if you know the background story, each of these dialogues, each of these conversations gain another meaning. So this went on and on. And finally, I remember, I think Swami decided that this was the time to give a pat on Amai's back and tell him that, you know, you are close to me. Because Amai says his 10 years in the outside world, you know, showed him that there is nothing in the world worth pining for and longing for. The Lord's love and the Lord's grace is the most supreme thing. Everything else is useless. They look like glittering pearls and gems and jewels, but they are trash. The Lord doesn't look so attractive, but once you get the Lord, you have peace, contentment, love, joy forever and ever. And he resolved in his heart, never again would he leave Swami. Never, and nothing will pluck him away from Swami. He says this kind of resolve might not have been there had he continued just. That is the reasoning he sees now, but he says we don't know what is Swami's idea or plan, but that is the perfect plan. So this happened in 2007. It was the day, the MBA day, the 21st of August. Every year is celebrated as the MBA day when this course began in the institute. And as is the practice, the students plan to put up a drama. Mm-hmm. So by now Amai had passed out, he was no longer a student, he was a research scholar, okay. And he was there as a director for a drama that was proposed. But apparently Swami told the vice chancellor that, you know, just a week back on August 15th there was already a drama, why another drama, no need drama, have only speeches for the MBA day. So the MBA department came up with four of the senior most teachers, the most experienced, who had been with Swami for almost 30 years or so. To deliver talks on that day, they wanted Swami to choose. Swami said, let there be somebody who can speak and sing. Swami laid a lot of emphasis on singing. He said, I want people who can sing. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there were only two students who were doing their Masters of Philosophy in the MBA department who had the capability to sing well and speak well, too. And one among them was Amai. And therefore, Amai got his chance to give a talk. That talk, I think, is available even on Radio Sai, delivered on the 21st of August 2007, mm-hmm. where he sang and spoke. And I remember seeing Swami that day. Swami was almost in tears. He was so moved. He was so happy. Each boy spoke for half an hour. And after 1 hour, Swami said, Swami's heart is so full that no words are coming out. I'm unable to deliver my discourse.
Oh.
And Swami didn't deliver his discourse. He went into the interview room, came out and said, have bhajans, and retired after the bhajans. And now the beautiful part comes, you know.
And what did Swami tell him after the speech?
Yes. Swami just patted his cheeks.
Okay.
And sent him back and said, very happy, very happy, very good. That's all, nothing else. And, whatever I said that Swami said is what Swami told him. You know,
okay.
I said that Swami said he doesn't wishes to deliver a discourse because his heart is full. That was all what Swami told these two boys.
Okay, they would have gone and prayed to Swami.
They prayed to Swami for discourse because they thought Swami said, I don't want to speak. So they went and said, Swami, please speak. Swami said, no, the way you have spoken is so wonderful then. And then, you know, when during the dining session, Swami has spoken to the vice chancellor and all the elders and all the seniors. But before that, you know, what happened was Swami said, after the bhajan, you know, Swami apparently felt bad that he had not delivered the discourse when everybody was expecting a discourse. Swami said, tomorrow I will deliver a discourse because I am not doing it today, you know. It's almost like Swami saying, it is my fault, right? I didn't deliver today. So tomorrow I will deliver the discourse. He gave that consolation. And that evening, the vice chancellor comes to the hostel and he calls all the teachers and says, Swami has decided to bless you all with a divine discourse tomorrow and it's in the morning. So all of you are requested. Swami has, you know, told me to invite you all to the mandir.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that, you know, the vice chancellor inviting, because that time the institute is running and the classes have to function.
Right.
But all the students, not only the MBA students, everybody benefited from that because they were invited to the mandir for the discourse. And after informing them, the vice chancellor sends away all the teachers and keeps only these two boys and tells them, you know, Swami is speaking only about you two boys. He's speaking only about you two boys. He told about you to the secretary Chakravarti sir, to Venkatraman sir, to Anil Kumar sir, to V. Srinivasan sir, to everybody. Swami is speaking about you only. And Swami is saying, we must do everything possible to retain such good boys. We will never get such good boys. And therefore, Swami has asked me to ask you, what is the salary that you seek? He is ready to pay you whatever you want. He just wants you to stay here with him. He is asking, what is the kind of accommodation and lodging that you seek? Because he is ready to give you anything so that you stay here. He is asking, what is it that you seek? Just name it, it will be yours. Because Swami says that in return, he just wants you to stay with him. And you know, Amaya was moved to tears at this time. And you know, his 10 years away from Swami had taught him how valuable, you know, Swami is. What Swami meant to him, he knew it and nobody else could understand. He said, sir, Swami has given me everything that I need. You know, he is telling this as if it's a request. But this is actually a great opportunity, a great blessing that he showering on me, giving me the opportunity to stay with him throughout life. Please say that he has already given me all that I need and I just have my gratitude to offer to him. The next day in the discourse also, you can see the discourse from the Book Trust website, delivered on the 22nd of August 2007, Swami spoke glowingly about these two boys and said that these two are the ideal for all the students. They have goodness. They have won gold medals, but they have goodness. Gold may lose its value, but goodness will not lose its value. And I want such boys to be with me. And you know, the circle felt complete then. Imagine, here was a student whom Swami had struck off the name and said, take him away from the rolls. And that act of Swami had given rise to such passion and enthusiasm and energy in him to win back God's love, that he had come back and made Swami say that, you know, I can't give up these two boys. I want this boy to be with me always. I am ready to do anything to keep this boy with me. And so, you know, Amay feels that at times you are made to move away from the Lord. The Lord makes you move away from him so that you can become even more closer to him. When I heard this, I was also moved. And I felt that this is really a very poignant and powerful lesson. At times when we see others or ourselves in our quest of God seem to be moving away from God, let us know that Swami is doing this to us to get us closer to himself. We might have pined, Swami, we want to see you, we want to be with you, but we are not able to come to Puttaparthi. We say, Swami, we want to attend bhajans and attend satsangs, but not able to attend it. Why are you keeping me away, Swami? Give me this opportunity. But let us know in our heart of hearts that even that is making us closer to the Lord. He is taking us closer and closer.
Beautiful, Arvind. I know, not only had he gone through that, but even when listening to that, it gives us such a strong message. And you know, we might tell it in so many other ways, we might go through it in many ways, but I think the final understanding is God knows what is best, not only for me, for everybody around, and just
because he sees the big picture.
Right, he sees the big picture. Finally, that is what the thing is, and our endeavor should always be to tag along to that big picture, even if we are not able to see it. Be aware and, you know, be satisfied that there is somebody who sees the big picture and he's guiding me. You know, and that is the one which actually gives us the best idea. I remember one of the philosophers has this wonderful lesson to teach through this analogy. He would say, there's a little child who wants to cross the road, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks at a elderly person. He says, uncle, can you help me cross the road? Mm-hmm. And the man puts out his finger and says, yeah, hold my hand and I'll take you across. So this girl is seeing that this man is, it's a huge highway. And this man is taking a step forward. Then he's seeing something come by and he's taking a step backwards. And then he's moving to his left, moving to the right. Typically how you cross a road, you know, you have to
navigate
all the vehicles which are coming every
especially
now.
Especially in India. In Western countries, they have it.
Yeah, you have pedestrian walks, but you know, something like typically a busy road in India. And this little child is thinking that, see, I want to go across the road. Why is this man walking backwards? Why is he taking a step backwards? Why is he taking a step to his side? You know, why is he stopping? You know, you just have to go forward. If across the road is where you want to go, you just have to keep walking. And he says that the man who's taking you across knows what exactly he's doing. All you have to do is just hold on to that finger with faith.
And trust him.
And trust him. And he adds that we are actually doing something even worse than that. He says, sometimes we're holding this uncle's finger, sometimes we're holding that uncle's finger, sometimes this auntie's finger, you know.
Changing our gods and gurus,
yeah,
thinking that somebody will help us better.
From one guru to the other.
Mm.
You know, that's exactly what we all tend to do. Even when, as you're saying, when the darkest times come, as we've given the many analogies, sometimes...
I think that is where, you know, Amay's story also comes beautifully, that when your guru apparently himself is, you know, in court plotting against you, you even then you hold on. When dark clouds fill your skies, hiding sunshine from your eyes, say his name, say his form, hold on. That's what the song is about, right?
And I think with growing with understanding, you will see everything that's happening to you as being engineered by your God. You know, not just what is directly done by him. I think let's make a prayer to Swami that he helps us see that bigger picture and, you know, not get carried away by what is right in front of us. And we pray to Swami to guide us thus. And
we have far exceeded our time frame, but, you know, it just gets so involved, and it was so beautiful reliving it. It's so inspiring. And as you said, we pray to Swami that come what may, let us never let go of his hand. Let us just hold on, because he will never let go of our hand. Let him be the uncle that we hold hand to cross this highway called life. With this, dear listeners, we come to the end of this afternoon satsang. Hope you enjoyed it. Please share your feedback, your thoughts, your feelings with us by writing to us at listener@radiosai.org. We will now leave you with a song, the other side of which you will be joined by Brother Chandu with his segment, Love to Love.